The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Today was a big day for you. You made a decision to bronze those cleats after 11 years in the NFL.
You know what, man? 11 seasons, 6 championship games, 3 Super Bowls, and 2 Super Bowl wins. Man, I did everything I set out to do on the field.
What's going on? It's Keyshawn, and welcome to my show, Undisputed Presents All Facts, No Breaks. And joining me today is a former Rutgers standout, 11-year NFL veteran, and 2-time Super Bowl champion with the New England Patriots, Logan Ryan. What's up, Logan?
What's going on, man?
Man, nothing. It was a big day. And by the way, my son, Keyshawn Jr., also joins us on the show. So
how you doing?
Nice. He sits behind the camera over there, twiddling his thumbs.
Check him out.
Today was a big day for you. You made a decision to bronze those cleats after 11 years in the NFL.
Threw them up on the wire.
How did you come to that conclusion?
Man, that's a great question, a question I'm going to be asked a lot today and probably going forward. I just think you got to feel when it's time. And I don't think we're really trained to know when it's time. I think we're trained to kind of get in this league, fight to be in this league, think about, you know, how to stay in the league, but you're not really trained or prepared on how to get out the league. And I think for me, I was in a position, one, to retire financially. Mm. I made my bread. I saved my bread. I was smart with it. I took care of my family, but I was smart with my bread in a way that I didn't need to play anymore. So now I was in the ability to make decisions, mm-hmm. right, with financial freedom. And then I kind of looked as a guy that always loved being a great father, loved being a husband. I loved training around my kids' schedule. And now my kids are getting older. They got sports every day and I want to be there. And mm-hmm. I saw LeBron had a quote the other day that greatness is just like sacrifice all the time. And I was sacrificing some things, missing some things. I want to be there for my kids. So I didn't want to play for certain teams that are too far away from home for me, which was Tampa, and live without my kids for a year. I was tired of having them switch schools. So all those decisions led to me say, you know what, man, 11 seasons, 6 championship games, 3 Super Bowls, and 2 Super Bowl wins. Man, I did everything I set out to do on the field.
So 11 seasons, you played with the Patriots, the Titans, the Giants, the Bucks, and the 49ers. You beat me by one team, but that's okay. How was that, though, bouncing around from state to state, city to city?
Yeah.
Different teams, different head coaches, different locker rooms. How did you take that on?
I think everyone was a different challenge. And I try to make the best of it and see the positive side of it. I think it's the stress and strain it puts on your wife and kids of having, you know, my daughter was at 3 different schools in 3 years, going to third grade. Different COVID for kindergarten, first grade was different, second grade was a different state, third grade. And I'm like, man, this is like raising a child when you're in the military. Like, I got to find a way to find stability for them, a way to find a base. And that's when I said, I'm not going to move her anymore. If a team calls me, or if I go to a team, I'm just going to go and live without my family. I didn't have tons of joy living without my kids every day either. So it was tough. When I was in New England, I got drafted there, right? I won Super Bowls there. I learned how to be a pro there. That was cool. I left to Tennessee in free agency. New England doesn't always pay their players and go to free agency. And sometimes you got to do what you got to do to set your family up for financial freedom. So I did that. Was able to go to New York, where I'm from, New Jersey. I would go home, and Joe Judge, they had some Patriot coaches that wanted to bring me in, be a leader, be a captain for that team. And I was able to do that. And that was cool. And then we don't win. New GM comes in, new coach comes in. What happens? They clean house. I got cleaned out part of that. I just signed an extension, got all my money from it. And I was able to go back to Tampa, where I had a house. Mm-hmm. Boom. So once I'm in Tampa, I'm set. I'm like, okay, this is the perfect write off. I play with Brady again. And then I broke my foot, week 4 of the season. And I was like, man, okay, I never really had an injury where I lost a lot of time in a season. Pretty much missed most of my year, came back for the playoffs, got bounced out. and I didn't like how that went. So I was pretty much good last season. Then that's when the 49ers called me. I was on a cruise on Thanksgiving. Haven't really been training. I was on a cruise. I was getting ready to retire last year. Shanahan called me on a cruise. I left the cruise ship, ended up starting for the 49ers 2 weeks later, ended up starting the Super Bowl, starting the playoff runs. And that showed me my ability to really know this game and play. And I can still do that. But I also was like, man, I can't keep doing this for too much longer. And I got to make the best decision for my family.
See, Keyshawn, you thought you was the only kid in America that went to like 14 different schools in 3 years. His kids did the same thing.
I think I went to like 11 and by the time I was 11.
Yeah, you got your beat. Got
well,
beat.
Because off season, I'd go back
to train somewhere.
Yeah, so it's like, they had to go with me up until the point where they got a little bit older. And then I just said, you know what, man, I'm going to just stay in Carolina by myself. Y'all just come on the weekends,
right?
You know, and come to the games. And then after the games, y'all fly home for school. That was basically the routine.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember I had my family up in New Jersey when I just got released from the Giants and I just signed at the Bucks. I was going to OTAs because I was new. I wanted to learn the scheme. And I was on the same flight every Sunday night to fly down to Florida to go to OTAs Monday to Thursday and then back on Thursday. The same flight for 12 weeks in a row, 24 flights, like bang, bang. Same crew, same staff, same pilot. I'm dapping them up. Let's go. And it was cool. And then after like, you know, 6-7 weeks, now you got delays. Now the flight ain't getting out on time and you just spend all this time in the airport. And I think, you know, people don't see all that that goes into it, right? For us to play the 17 games, a lot goes in all year.
So like a lot like me, I'm from Southern California here in Los Angeles. I went to USC, the real USC, the Trojans. And I was born and raised. You born and raised in New Jersey, New York area, the tri-state.
Yeah.
And you wind up going to Rutgers.
Yeah.
What was that like being able to be a top-notch high school football player in your home state, but then also go to Rutgers and stay at home for your people to see you play?
Yeah, I think that was huge. And a lot of people ask me, man, why'd you go to Rutgers, right? And the funny thing is, when Rutgers was recruiting me, that's when they had Ray Rice, Kenny Britt, the McCourty twins. They were number two in the nation when they had that team. And that's when I started getting recruited by them. So they were just as good as any school recruiting me. So the fact I was able to stay close to home and they had the twins, and I knew the twins were going to graduate soon, I can come in and play. In 07, 08, I came in 09. So they were recruiting my sophomore, junior year of high school. So I really follow those McCourty twins, man. And I've been following them all along. I've been playing with Devin and obviously in New England, followed their shoes at Rutgers, got drafted. They really paved the way of what's possible for a kid out there. And then, you know, I really signed to Tennessee to play with Jason. Jason was Tennessee's corner. And the day I signed, let's tell you the NFL, the day I signed there, I show up the first day from OTAs and he got released. He was leaving with a trash bag. I was like, oh, I felt terrible. So he had to go to Cleveland. He went 0-16. And then he ended up going to New England and got my locker in New England. So we switched places. He got a ring in New England. I was down in Tennessee doing my thing. So that's how this league works. But I always lead on the McCourty twins, man, because they've always, as you see now on TV, they've always made smart moves.
So in 2013, you were drafted by the New England Patriots. You were 83rd overall.
Yeah.
Did you have any, like, inkling that, okay, here I am, the second round's gone, third round, New England's going to take me? Or you, at that point, you're just like, man, I don't give a damn who take me. I'm just ready to go.
Man, Look, it's not as bad as a guy sliding like to the seven. I'm grateful for it, but I was pretty frustrated on draft night. I left as a junior, so I left early, and I got a second round draft grade. I went to the combine. I didn't run it super fast. I ran a 4.5. I'm not a super combine athlete type of guy, but I came out of Rutgers All American. I came out, you know, All Conference 2 years in a row. I traveled with number one receivers. I see these corner stats coming out. These guys have like 90 tackles and 3 picks their whole career. I had 90 tackles, 20 PBUs, and 4 picks just my junior year. So I was like, man, I had, you know, so my numbers were insane, but I had no I didn't do well at the combine. I had no Senior Bowl to show it, right? So I had nowhere to really show. I just kind of was sliding. And then these guys kind of jumping ahead of me. I'm like, that guy, right? And
old draft.
Right, the draft. So the only DB I really was like, this guy's doing it, is Honey Badger.
Yeah.
I was Honey Badger's year. That was a guy that I was really like trying to keep up with. And we had Slay as well, and Slay's a dog. No knock on Slay. He's definitely great. But a bunch of DBs got drafted ahead of all of us.
But guess where they at now, though?
Right, they're watching this.
A lot of them dudes was at home fast, though. That happens every single year,
They were. So, yeah, I'm grateful New England got me. Bill knows what he's doing. And he drafted my college roommate, Daron Harmon, in the third round right with me. So me and my boy got to play together. He's a safety. I'm a corner. So we got to play together and link up for another 4 years.
Yeah, I go through this process every single year with cats that get drafted. You know, they say, well, you was the number one overall pick, man. How you get? I said, man, just chill. It's all right now in this 48-hour time period, you're going to stress out. You're going to pull your hair out.
Right.
But the moment that you be able to put that hat on that say New England Patriots, man, you're going to forget about everybody else, and you're going to be so happy, man.
No doubt.
I tell them that every single year. I go through this every year with somebody. I went through with my nephew. He went the second round. I told him, I said, man, all them Treadwells and all them dudes ain't going to be nowhere to be seen in 3 years.
Yeah, true.
They ain't going to be seen in 3 years. That's just the reality of it.
Spoken like a number one pick over here.
You know, that's just the reality of it, though. No, Logan, for real, though, because what happens is, like you explained to me, you says, well, my statistics, I'm supposed to go high. It's like, no, that's not what they're looking at. There's guys that have better numbers than me my year to draft.
Yeah.
But they didn't have an impact on the game the same way.
Yeah.
They was playing against different competition.
Yeah.
It wasn't playing against big-time competition. They was out messing around catching for 160 balls in one college season. And you're like, they not like that.
Yeah.
But it eventually, you know, the cream always rises to the top.
Well, here's the truth about you, Keyshawn, and the truth about it is, like, you can play ball, though.
Yeah, that's all
that
matters.
And, like, when you study a craft, you work on your craft, like, these guys can't play ball, right? So then I'm at the combine, right? Guy runs, jumps 40.
Yeah.
Guy runs 4.3. I see him backpedal. He backpedaled like a high school linebacker. Feet wide as this. I'm like, oh, he can't cover.
No.
He don't know what he's doing at the line of scrimmage. He can't turn his head around a high point, no football. No, that dude can't.
And he probably eventually.
But he's rising.
Yeah.
Somebody, an analyst, is saying that he's a riser. He's like, this dude can't play, though. But we don't know. And the beauty about the NFL, and I tell everyone this, if you don't love the game, you don't do it the right way, the game will humble you at the NFL.
Absolutely.
They do not care. They will find it. They will expose you quickly. You could sign a new deal and you'll be out of that deal in 2 years. The NFL, like no other league, will humble you and the cream will rise to the top.
No question about it. What was it like playing for Coach Belichick, the time that you had and you spent with him?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely got Belichick early in my career, so I didn't know any like different. You know, it was definitely a lot of discipline, But, man, he is so smart in a way to simplify the game for us. Like, he made the game seem so simple of what I want you to do. Logan, I don't want you to worry about that. Just don't let this guy beat you outside.
Yeah.
And Devin's got you inside. And I don't care how many interceptions you have or who or what Darrell Revis is doing over there. We are doubling this guy, period. And we didn't really, you know, there was no ego in the sense of saying, man, I want to cover him one-on-one. It's like, all right, let's just double him. Let's just win by 40. What we sweating about? Like, I think we had like no 100-yard receiver in my 4 years there. We took guys away. And I believe a lot of teams should play like that. Why would you let another team's best player or a guy that sets the rhythm of their offense, you know, kind of, why would you let another offense get in rhythm? We were so great at taking away offense's rhythm. And I thought he was a genius in his simplicity of explaining that.
Yeah, I had he was my defensive coordinator with the Jets.
Yeah.
So I had the privilege to sit in the meetings with him. You know, probably every Friday we would sit, or was it Saturday? It was Saturday or Friday. We would sit in a meeting for about an hour and a half, maybe even 2 hours, going over some bullshit film on a 2-minute package because I was a safety in our 2-minute. And so we'd be like, dude, they only going to run 4 plays here.
Yeah.
But he would go all the way back to wherever that coach who's calling the plays.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about, man, I seen stuff that was like ancient history, right? 10 years ago. I'm like, Bill.
Yeah, he's going to show some.
True enough, he went all the way back to, I don't remember who the offensive coordinator was, but we were playing the Jaguars in the divisional round playoff game. And I remember him saying, now look, they're going to go 3-by-1 over here. And when he does this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, all right. And it worked. I got a pick. So, you know, AG and the other DBs, oh, they was mad
because
they wanted me to just bat the ball down.
Yeah, bat it down.
No, I
took
it.
You were the jumper.
Yeah, I got it. I'm like, oh, I got it. This is mine. Y'all y'all be quiet. You know, Marcus Coleman, all of them. I tell me, y'all be quiet. I got this. This is mine.
Yeah, my resume. I'm the jumper. Y'all box out.
Are you surprised that he's not coaching this year? Just not the New England Patriots in the league in general.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I definitely think he was one of, you know, the better coaches available on the cycle. Vrabel as well. You know, I play with Vrabel, but I definitely think that times are changing. The league are looking for more offensive minded guys, looking for guys that are quarterback developers now. And maybe they just feel like Belichick's way. They're not sure if they're willing to change so much about the organization for what he needs. I don't know what he's requiring, because I know in New England, he had a lot of roster control and a lot of power that I don't know what he was asking for or whatnot. But pound for pound as a coach, he's definitely one of the best available.
So you spent two seasons with the Giants in 2020-21. Mm. And you grew up in South Jersey,
yeah,
which is a little further away from New York than what most people think, closer to PA,
yeah,
closer to Philly.
Yeah.
Did you grow up an Eagles fan at all? Or are you?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I did grow up an Eagles fan.
So why go to the Giants?
I grew up, I mean, it was, the Eagles didn't offer me a contract.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? So, but it's funny, when I got there, because I know how that rivalry is, man. That's like SEC football up there. For people, like NFL, NFC East football is, football up there is pro football is big. And you got to decide. Like, there's no tiptoeing. And it's Giants and it's Eagles, and everyone hates the Cowboys up there, period. So it's a good thing I didn't go to the Cowboys. But when I went up there, they said, oh, did you grow up, you know, I know you're from Jersey, you grew up a Giants fan. I'm like, man, I'm a fan of the NFC East. I've been watching these battles my whole career. I never answered. I just said I'm a fan of the NFC East. But yeah, I did grow up an Eagles fan. I grew up watching McNabb and Brian Dawkins and Jeremiah Trotter, and David Akers was the kicker, man. I can name almost everyone on the roster. But I grew up watching football.
Oh, so you didn't like me then?
I mean, you definitely had some ways, you know.
Yeah, you didn't like me because I used to terrorize the Eagles.
Yeah, Lito Shepard and the boys.
And Brown and Shelton Brown.
I mean, I got to look. Dog,
no,
probably,
Lito them,
I mean,
Lito
Dog probably got
good.
You one time.
No, Dog didn't do nothing but talk. Oh, that's yeah. All. He diving on piles. He a J.O.P. dude.
He crawled out the tunnel.
No, he going to crawl out the tunnel. Funny story, though. I don't know, but we're in Philadelphia. Yeah, we were in Philly, and he came out with the whole, that's my boy, too. He came out with the whole, the cartoon, that whatever the stuff,
the Wolverine.
Is.
Wolverine. Yeah, the Wolverine mask.
Wolverine
Weapon X.
Deal. He's doing all the Wolverine stuff.
That's
the
Logan, X, Weapon X name.
Doing
Logan.
All that, right?
Yeah.
So I catch him at the, you know, I'm standing on the sideline, and he come past our bench or whatever. I said, man, you need to stop with all of those fake ass WWE bullshit. Nobody want to hear all that. Come play football. He just was like, oh, you be just my house. I said, man, you need to go play. You need to do wrestling. That's what you need to do.
Yeah, he's speaking in tongues.
Now, the Eagle fans are interesting. When I was getting divorced from Keyshawn's mom, it's event.
smooth transition.
No, but great. I know the Eagle fans. I'm getting divorced from the mother. The whole stadium is screaming, where's your wife?
Oh, wow.
We at the event. Yeah. We get ready to go to the Super Bowl. We beat them. And they going crazy. They worried about where my wife was at.
Yeah,
but it was fun though. It was a lot of fun.
They do their research over there.
No, they definitely. It's a great transition. It's okay. He grown now.
Yeah, that's funny to me.
Yeah.
No, but you played for the Bucks in 2022, where you were reunited with your former teammate Tom Brady. What was it like being teammates with him?
Man, I love Tom Brady. Man, in a sense of just be able to. You know, when I got there as a rookie, his prime was a long time, you know, and he was definitely in the middle of it. And I just saw greatness every day, bro. I just like playing with Jordan. I just saw greatness. He set the tone every practice, just his work ethic. And I just studied it. And I remember being like, bro, like he was there every day early. You know, I know there's stories about it every day. I'm like, bro, what time do you get here? You just like, you just got to get here earlier and find out. And I would get there earlier and earlier, you know, 5:30 a.m., 5:15 a.m., 5 a.m. I was never going before 5 a.m. That was crazy to me to wake up at 4. And it would be Brady, Belichick, and Julian Edelman's car. I was a fourth car in New England for 4 years. Because back then, there's no parking spots for New England. It's whoever first come, first serve. So you could see by the spots who got there. And Tom Brady's in the middle of year 14, year 15, getting there at 4 in the morning every day. And I saw that. And then, you know, I played against him in Tennessee. So I got to play with him, got to play against him in the playoffs a couple times in Tennessee. And then I got to play with him again at the end of his career in Tampa, and just seeing him with his kids and his kids growing up, me having kids. Now I kind of was more of a grown man level with him,
yeah.
More of a peer, as opposed to looking up at him, kind of was a peer like, hey, we need to go do this together. We got to lead these guys together. So I kind of grew up alongside him. His leadership style, man, he's taught me a lot. So much I can never really repay him for.
You know, it's so funny how everybody prepares. You know, you hear people coming in at 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning. I was the last one in the building and the last one out the building.
Spoken
I would
like
be the,
true,
you know, they say, hey, we got to be here at 8. I come in at 7:45, practice is over. I'm there till 10 o'clock at night. I'm like not leaving early, but some people would come early. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, I'm not waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go mess around. I don't have to. I'd rather stay later so I can see all the film and I could do everything, because in the morning time, I'm like, I'd rather sleep in.
Yeah.
But everybody just does it a little bit different depending on, I guess there's so many different ways to skin a cat.
I mean, you know, Belichick, our practices were hard in New England. Hard. Like, there was years.
Man, y'all didn't even have 2-a-days in training camp.
Man, it was still, he still found a way to get on that hill every day. We were still squatting heavy. So there was, Bill made it known, like, nothing's more important to your development than practice.
Yeah.
Like, meetings is cool. This is cool. Man, practice is where we're going to find out who's going to play. Because it was competition every day.
Yeah.
You know, as it should be. So in training camp, we practice in the mornings. So I wanted to get there early, get my lift in, get my body ready to go in the day. So mentally, I can kind of shut it down after, you know, kind of be in my slides the rest of the day, just do recovery and get out to see my kids or whatever, you know, after, you know, when camp would get done or after practice or whatever. So I wanted to be up and at them so I can kind of, 9 a.m., I got to hit somebody. I'm ready to go. They still waking up.
Mm-hmm. So you played 11 seasons and you hit the postseason, 8 of those 11 seasons. You played in postseason games.
Yeah.
And you've seen all sorts of quarterbacks, and you played obviously with Tom Brady and Tannehill and a couple others along the way. But you just recently played with Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
Be honest with me, though. I ain't going to get you in trouble. I just want to know. Is he here to stay? Or is everybody still waiting for the shoe to drop and him to turn back into a pumpkin?
Nah, he's here to stay. I think they're going to give him a bag, too.
No, for sure they're going to give him a bag. They're going to have to.
Big bag.
Yeah, nah, he's going to be like one of the highest paid. People are going to be shocked. Like, what? He's going to be talking about that forever. But nah, he's here to stay. Shanahan loves him. Like, true. Like, I got there a week or so before we played Baltimore on Christmas. Remember that game? And he threw 4 picks.
Yeah.
And a lot of those picks were tip balls. You know, I mean, they're interceptions. Yeah, you can't do that. Yeah, it was just a bad day.
I always discount quarterbacks.
Right, it was a bad day.
And interceptions. You know? If somebody throws 15,
he had a
really
corner blitz. He went to throw it. One corner tipped up to the other corner. Like, that was crazy. So it's just a bad day. You know, a bad day at work. He didn't play great. But, like, he had 3 picks or whatever in the first half or third quarter. He's in the fourth quarter still stepping in, still slinging it, like still trying to throw the ball, trying to win a game. And Shanahan said, I remember in a meeting, he's like, I've coached a lot of quarterbacks. When quarterbacks have 3 or 4 interceptions, they're trying to check it down, protect, you know, get out of there, get out of Dodge, not trying to take no more hits. He still stayed like kind of in his progression, but kind of had this gunfire about him, this dog about him. And he always would ask me questions about Brady and stuff like that. And in the playoffs, I think you saw, like, the 49ers were a team that's used to playing ahead. In the playoffs, we got behind a bunch. And Purdy was coming in the second half, going to get it, making plays happen with his feet, with his arm. He's got this dog ability about him on top of the processing. I think he processes like a Kirk Cousins. But he also has this dog in him, though, that I don't think people fully see, but he does it to win games over there.
Which one of the receivers in San Francisco is harder to defend? Ayuk or Jennings or Debo?
We had Demo on the podcast before the Super Bowl, and he said it was Ayuk. Diamador Lenore.
Yeah. It's Ayuk. Because his route running is definitely the best of the three. Like, he's crispy, fast, electric. But, like, well, all three of them, like, what Debo does with the ball after he gets it is just special. That's world-class special. And what Jennings does, boy, them blocking, like, the 49, the reason why Ayuk deserves to get paid is because of route running and all that stuff. Like Keenan Allen-ish, a little more speed. But, dude, this dude's blocking, too. Blocking. Like, I like playing number of receivers that don't block. That's the easy day for me that don't block, right? I can tell if it's run or pass. They subbing out every 2 plays. I'm like, all right, they ain't getting the ball. The ball ain't coming this way. They don't bring a backup receiver in to go catch a pass on one play. They're running the ball. Ayuk staying in the whole game.
Yeah.
And he's blocking dudes 70 yards downfield. And he's blocking guys to the Gatorade cooler with Jennings and Debo. So those guys are asked to block, and he's also running high-quality routes and catching the ball when he's targeted. So I think all that, that's a guy that I would pay because he plays the position every single down.
So episode 9 of Patriots documentary, The Dynasty, featured the mystery of your former teammate Malcolm Butler only playing 1 snap in Super Bowl 51. Mm. Let's watch this clip.
In the 2017 season, Malcolm Butler played 98% of the snaps. Why was he only on the field for 1 play during the Super Bowl?
Matt, we've talked about that.
I didn't ask you about it.
What has been told to me is that there was something personal going on between Bill and Malcolm that was not football related.
What were your thoughts when you heard Malcolm would not be playing?
I was a star with Malcolm the previous 2 years. And I tell you to this day, nobody, I don't know.
Does he know?
I don't, he never told me. And Devin,
did he sign an NDA or something?
I don't know.
Because by now, I'll be like, yo.
Nobody truly knows, bro. I will say this, though. I'm in Tennessee that year. Them boys just went back to another Super Bowl. So we had beat Atlanta the year before. I left free agency. Malcolm was, still there. And they were playing Philly. And he called me that, like, he FaceTimed me. He never FaceTimes me. He FaceTimed me, like, the Friday or Saturday before the game. Like, you know, playoff week two, like, or Super Bowl, like, you got 2 weeks of prep. That is just walkthroughs. Yeah. Like, nothing new's happening. And he FaceTimed me. And I was on my phone. I called him back. He's like, just pick up. He's like, man, forget it. I'm good. And he's hung up. And it was really like frantic. I'm like, what the heck is going on with Malcolm? Like, game's tomorrow. Then I saw him crying during the national anthem. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. I said, I hope they don't mess with Malcolm. And then he didn't play. So, but he never told me. I was his teammate in Tennessee after. He never told me.
Did you ask him?
Yeah, of course I asked him.
I mean, like, I don't know. You might be business.
I mean, he knew he was out. Like, before that game, he knew he was out of New England going forward.
I wonder what the hell he did.
Yeah, that's crazy.
This is a mystery that is going to be in Malcolm's book. So, that's when I'm going to learn it, too. But I don't know. And
I honestly want
to
know what he did.
Hopefully, we find out. So, the latest NFL rumor is that Micah Parsons' behavior is reportedly worn thin within some of the Cowboys organization. Dad, I'll start with you first. Could you see the Cowboys trading a generational talent like Parsons?
For what?
Yeah.
For who? What? Ward Thien? Why? Because he's his own person and he has a personality and they want to bottle him up? What has he done? I mean, other than try and produce on the field to help their sorry ass win some playoff games, outside of that, I mean, what has he really done? I mean, I get it. Yeah. He likes to talk and chirp and he played in the NBA All-Star game that I didn't like because he hadn't gotten his bag yet full of money. But he's going to be, whenever that time comes, he's going to be the highest paid defensive player in the history of the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Does he need to play better down the stretch in the regular season? Yeah, of course he does. But you're going to always get some vitriol, some jealousy, some negativity coming when your team isn't performing at a high level and you're supposed to be the guy. But no, you don't trade him. The Jets traded me for two number ones, and they still can't figure out why, and they still can't replace me. They still looking for me. They still, to this day, they hoping like hell Garrett Wilson continues to thrive.
Then they just get somebody who they get in free agency.
Again, they still trying to replace me, period.
Logan, what do you think about the situation?
Yeah, I just think he's too valuable at too valuable of a position, man. I think the most valuable position of what they're paying nowadays is guys that can rush the passer, and Micah does that on the highest levels, and that is the Cowboys' way. I mean, he's getting us clicks, he's giving us entertainment, stuff to talk about. That's what the Cowboys do. So I think, you know, you're going to get this fluff all around the draft, maybe to gauge a market. If something were to happen, is maybe they put it out there to see if a team bites on it. But I don't know. Do you trade like a top 5 pick overall or top 10 pick for Micah Parsons or something like
you'd
that?
You'd have to trade a lot. You got to get a lot for Micah Parsons.
Yeah, I'm not trading. Micah Parsons to pick up an unknown.
Right.
Just not doing that.
Right.
I know what he is. I know he's going to give me 13 sacks a year. Could be more. I know that for a fact. I know he's going to come to play. I know we got to set the defense to him. Our offense is better yet. Got to set the offense to him. Mm-hmm. They got to find him wherever he's at in pre-snap read. Oh, Micah's the Mike. Micah's this. Micah's that. Number 11's that. They got to find that. Why would I want to get that up?
Right. Yeah, the Dallas has some payment options coming up here. They got to pay some guys.
They got it.
They got CD. They got, what are you going to do with Dak? You gotta got to pay Dak again. You
got
to pay.
They got it.
Mike, and then what do you have outside of that?
You got
your O-line's getting old.
You got to pay Zach Martin. You got to pay Michael Parsons, CD Lamb, and make a decision on Dak Prescott.
How much is that?
But you got it.
$2 billion? How much?
You got it. He got it.
That's a lot of big names, you know?
He got it.
From what I see with teams, they don't all keep it all.
No, but he
It ain't like the Chiefs where they got, you know.
No, he keeps it, though. He has no problem paying players and kicking it down the road.
Yeah.
The can down the road. He's one of the few owners in the league that I've known, having played for him, been around him, watched him from years. He pays his players.
Right.
That's one thing.
So you're giving CeeDee Lamb $30 million a year?
In a heartbeat, yesterday.
Yeah. And Mike,
one of the top five pass catchers in the NFL. Michael Parsons, one of the top five defensive ends in the NFL.
35.
So, yeah, I'm going to spend.
Dak's getting a new one?
See, Dak's situation is such, I think, that they may be sitting and waiting to see, let him play out this final year.
Yeah.
At that $30 million that he's going to get. But if he does what they think he could, that I think he's capable of doing, I'm going to certainly give him $55 million a year. Of real money, though.
Right.
Not fake money. I'm going to give him real cash, like the rest of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. Because that's what he is. He's a top six quarterback.
Right. So you're paying all that money, right, to those guys that need it, Zach Martin, Dak, CD, to have the same team that's been underperforming for the last 4 years.
But is it the
same team? You got no new player.
But is it the same team, same players, or is it the scheme? Is it all of a sudden Dan Quinn and what he was doing in his defense moving Michael Parsons all over the place? Well, Michael Parsons should probably just line up and go get that guy on the other side, opposed to moving him to middle linebacker, putting his hand in the ground, dropping him in the third.
Yeah.
No, just too much.
Yeah, well, that game plan versus the Packers, I watched it on film, was not good. They had safeties playing linebacker. Safeties can do that, but they had no idea the run fits.
They're 190 pounds. Yeah,
that was not... That was a no-shot effort from the coaching point to the playing point. But I thought it's going to be a... You waited out to get Deion and Shador in there.
They might do that, too. He might wait it out and get Shador and Deion in. If Deion would like to go coaching the pros. I don't know that he would. He, you know, it seems like he's enjoying college. Because pro football was a
team,
different.
If there was a team that he would coach in the pros, I think that would be the team. Where he could have
that would be the closest availability. I mean, that would be the closest team that possibly could have the availability that he would, that I can see him coaching. I can see him coaching Atlanta, but they just hired a coach in Raheem.
Yeah.
But if that was available, I could see Atlanta. I could see the Cowboys for sure. Those are probably the two.
Yeah.
Houston, but they got somebody.
Maybe an LA team or something?
Nah. I can't see him in L.A. He's more of a Texas South.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a Miami if that was available. That type of situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Logan, you famously intercepted Tom Brady's last throw as a Patriot and trolled him by asking him to autograph the ball. What was Brady's reaction to you wanting the ball signed?
He was cool about it, man. He was actually in on it. But, yeah, I had that ball laying around. I don't really do a lot. Like with my interception, but I keep them and I give them to family members. If I got a family member that's a fan of that team, that's your team. Oh, here's a ball. You know, you a Packers fan. Here's Aaron Rodgers. You were this fan. So I had that ball kind of just literally in my office. And I said, man, I'm gonna get Tom to sign this. I don't know how many more games he's going to play. So I snuck it in to kind of one of our last games. Like, yo, I put some stuff because people put jerseys and stuff on next to his locker. And he'll knock it out and sign him.
But wait, how did you intercepted the Tennessee New England game in Foxborough?
Yeah, it was his last game. His last pass to Patriot.
How did you get him the ball?
I kept it, and I was his teammate in Tampa.
Oh, you was teammate
in
Tampa.
A year
that's
later,
right. Okay.
So I came down to Tampa, and I still had the ball.
Got it.
So as we were kind of going through, and he, you know, that was when he came out of retirement to play one last year, and we didn't, you know, so it was kind of like everyone put stuff on his chair to sign. So I stuck the ball in there with a note like, yo, can you just sign this one and date this one? And he was like, oh man, this is my ball that, yeah. So I kind of snuck it on me right here.
No, I remember one backed up.
Yeah.
And it game, was a pick six.
Six or, yeah.
Yeah. His last pass as a Patriot, I might auction that thing off one day. Never know, charity or something. Or just for me. I'm retired. I might need it.
So news broke last week that Bronny James is entering his name in both the NBA draft and the transfer portal. On Sunday, he posted a graphic of him and LeBron as teammates for the Lakers. So, Dad, do you think the Lakers should or will draft Bronny in this upcoming NBA draft?
I think they should, number one. And I think they most likely would because, I mean, he wants to play with his son. And if he goes to the NBA draft, what you going to do? You going to tell LeBron no? I mean, they burned picks on dudes all day long and never even come over from overseas.
Right.
So they waste second round picks like it's nothing. And if he's not a first round talent and he wants to play with his father, then yeah, go ahead and do it. Why not? You know me, you behind the camera. So what does that tell you?
He's physically ready for the NBA?
I don't give a damn. You behind the camera. So what does that tell you? I'm going to do whatever I can for my son. Period. Nepotism is live and well.
Yeah.
And in the NBA circles, he's ready for what level in the NBA though? Are we asking him, look, he's never going to be a star. He's going to be a role player. That's what he's going to be. Okay.
You said never?
If you're trying to compare him to his father.
No, not that. That's.
But see.
That's LeBron James, but he'll never be like a.
When you're talking about star players, you're talking about perennial all-stars, right?
Yeah.
You're talking about Steph Curry. You're talking about Devin Booker, KD, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Ant-Man. Like, you're talking about at a different level.
No Jalen Brunson in him?
Well, Jalen Brunson is a scoring machine.
Yeah.
He's not a scorer. That's the difference. He would most likely be a defender, has a nice body. He's obviously going to get stronger, bigger. He's got long arms. He could jump. He has some athletic ability. When you're looking at defensive players, lateral movement side to side, can he defend the Ant-Mans of the world and the Devin Bookers of the world? That's what we're going to get him for.
Yeah, that's what we're paying him to do.
That's what we're paying him to do. We're not paying him to fill it up. The old Jalen Brunson is paid to fill it up.
Yeah.
He ain't paid to defend.
Yeah.
So there's a different type of guard there.
Yeah, you know, Jalen Brunson's winning national titles in college and you know, leading the tournament and scoring and stuff. So that's a different level, 1,000%. And Jalen Brunson's a little older coming out. But I mean, from a business standpoint, you have to draft him.
Man, I'm drafting him.
Are you drafting him with your first round pick?
Well, I ain't say all that, but
what if someone else is like, hey.
But that's not going to happen.
Bro,
I don't think if you have the
25th overall pick, you
wouldn't
say.
No, but I don't think.
If Bron's coming.
Well, see, now you're saying something that the Lakers can do.
What?
The Lakers ain't trying to lose LeBron.
Right.
So we going to sign him. We going to draft him. But if you telling me that, okay, so let's play it this way. LeBron James tells them, I want my son to be drafted in the first round.
Yeah.
And the Lakers balk on it. Let's say they balk.
Yeah, they balk on it, yeah.
And if I'm LeBron, deuces. I'm gone. I'm getting ready to go to Dallas. And I'm going to hook up with Luka and Kyrie. And I'm going to Dallas for the next 3 years and my son coming. That's the way I would play it.
Yeah.
That's the way I would play it. But I don't think he would give them that ultimatum to take him in the first round. And the reason other teams aren't going to take him in the first round is because everybody knows the desire for him to play with his son.
Yeah.
And so when you messing around with Clutch, which is represented by him, which he's part owner in, Rich Paul and a whole slew of NBA guys, at the end of the day, you kind of want to just stand pat. Don't get the messing up, talking about I'm a drafty. Don't do that.
Yeah. And I mean, they could say no too, right? Like, I'm sure LeBron and them would say, we're not going to any team but the Lakers.
But the Lakers or wherever I play.
So how do you feel about NFL players doing that as well?
If you have the power to pull that, then go right ahead.
Did you consider doing that?
I told the New York Jets not to draft me. I told them not to draft me. It's in my book.
So
I told them, don't draft me. If you're going to pay me like I'm the seventh pick of the draft, because they were trying to do a pre-draft deal.
Yeah.
They want to do it like they just for some reason felt that I just had to be in New York. I'm like, no, I go to Jacksonville, number two, and get what I know I'm supposed to get, then go number one and have you just completely fuck me over.
Right, so it wasn't slotted money-wise back then. You had to negotiate.
Yeah, you had to negotiate your contract. So they was trying to give me seventh pick money to be the first overall pick. I'm like, no, I'm good. I go to Jacksonville at two, and I already know I'm going to Jacksonville.
Right.
I know for 100% fact I'm going to Jacksonville. We already know. And they wind up drafting me on draft day. I told them don't. But if you have that power, man, you flex your muscles all day long because they going to do it to you.
Exactly. 100%.
Why you wouldn't do it to them?
100%. Yeah, I agree with that.
Right? I mean, he behind the camera over there.
Exactly.
I ain't shy.
The fourth time.
I ain't shy about it at all.
Fourth time.
Yeah, for the fourth time, right, let them know.
So, switching to women's basketball, Caitlin Clark has taken women's basketball to new heights. This season alone, she's rewritten college basketball record books. But Iowa didn't win the national championship. Shout out Dawn Staley. So I have to ask the question. Everyone's been debating the past few days. Does Caitlin Clark need a championship to be considered one of the greats?
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Championships are team won things. And she took her team and it took them to a potential level to beat a UConn, to beat a LSU. Iowa has no business beating LSU without Caitlin Clark taking them to the level. They even can believe that they can. Mm-hmm. Or to beat a UConn who's more experienced, better roster, probably better coach. And then to beat a South Carolina last year. You know, I think she put so much belief in everyone around her. I mean, I'm watching the game. I know who Stokey is. I'm like, come on, Stokey, run that lane. Like I'm tuned in to them because Caitlin Clark has me watching. And I know their whole roster. Like, them girls have roles, and they know their roles. And now they're knocking off some champs, some blue chip programs because she put so much belief in that entire state. So I just think, no, absolutely not. She did everything that was in her power to do, took it as far as she could, and I think she's going down as one of the greatest.
Yeah, if you're saying that she's going to go down, if your question is, does she go down as one of the greatest college basketball players? Yes. The statistics would suggest that she goes down as one of the greatest basketball players ever. She went through a gauntlet of Colorados and the LSUs and the UConns just to get knocked off by South Carolina. However, when you start talking about the GOAT, no, she's not the GOAT. She's just not. And that is because she does not have a ring. Mm. And when you are a GOAT, you got rings, or at least a ring. No one is having a conversation about somebody being the greatest at that particular sport if they hadn't delivered a championship. Although your championships are a team game, within the confines of a team, it still doesn't matter. If we're going to consider you the best to ever do it, you got to have a ring, because everybody you would consider, think about Breonna Stewart, I could go on and up, Cheryl Miller. I mean, I could just go on and on about girls or people in general in sports that we consider the GOAT. We don't consider in football Dan Marino the GOAT, because Dan Marino won a championship. We consider Tom Brady the GOAT. We argue Joe Montana's the GOAT, right, because they got championships. We argue that Patrick Mahomes is going to eventually surpass Tom Brady as a GOAT because he will probably win more championships and MVPs. So it's hard to give her that GOAT status of all time, the greatest of all time, and you haven't won a championship. That's going to be a hard one to give.
I mean, I think it's different with college and pro sports. Pro sports, you got a professional roster around you, mm-hmm, right? In college, you're not picking your teammates. They're getting recruited from the same state. You know, these guys that have won championships, their team is just so much better than a guy they're playing against. But they might be playing against a guy or a woman or a female girl that Caitlin Clark's the best player in the world, but she don't have the best team, right? Yeah, and it's not like you're saying, oh, well, these guys that we consider the GOAT in football and Mahomes or Brady and this and Dan Marino didn't do it. Like, these guys have paid rosters to do that. They stick together. They stick in an organization for 10 years. She got 4 years to come in. Hope she got a good freshman class with her, right? You don't know who the seniors were that are with her. You can go get a ring in college with a loaded senior class.
Yeah, but right? You're not going to be considered 2 years on a two-year run at the level that she, Logan, has been on. No one is going to say, they're going to say she's one of the greatest players of all time. But when you're talking about the GOAT, Diana Taurasi, I believe, has 3 or 4.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just hard.
Yeah, I mean, this UConn team, men's, just went back-to-back. I can't tell you who a guy on their roster, they might have 4 when they're done, but that don't mean.
They will never go down.
Right.
As the greatest the greatest basketball program in college history. I had this conversation earlier. Do you know what the 1990 UNLV Running Rebels, they wiped the floor with that team last night.
Yeah.
With Stacey Augmon and Larry Johnson and Greg Anthony and Anderson Hunt and David Butler. Man, they wiped the floor with them. Even the Fab Five that did not win a championship. Man, they would run shop on UConn. I could go on and on and on.
Right.
Georgetown, 84. You weren't even born then. In 84, they had this dude named Michael Graham, Patrick Ewing, Michael Jackson, Reggie Williams, And they went up against Hakeem Olajuwon in a five-slammer-jammer. I sound old, but it's the truth.
He said five slam a jam.
The 90s, 80s.
No. I could go. 70s. I could go into the 2000s if you really want me to dive into that. But what I'm all I'm saying is,
you got to cap it off with.
You got to cap it off.
I think she's in the Mount Rushmore. Obviously, I don't, you know, Cheryl Miller, and I don't know all their numbers to know who.
Yeah, it's a that bunch of men. You right? got Candace you know, Parker,
that's hard to do.
And Cheryl Miller,
right?
And Cheryl Swoops. I mean, people be like.
Yeah,
nah.
But she's definitely up there, man. She is like generationally.
Yeah, she's ridiculous.
She might be Allen Iverson in her era. She changed the game.
Well, she changed the game.
Right, she changed the game from a culture of Steph Curry. Yeah,
just like that.
Right, but you know, people might not put him ahead of Magic because of the rings. But did he not change the game in a way that now look at all these kids how they play it? That's what she did.
Oh no, he completely changed the game as how they play. And Steph got what does Steph have? Four.
Four.
Yeah, Magic have five, I think. Four or five. But Magic was a 6'9 point guard. So when he came into the league at 6'9, you never seen a 6'9 dude run the floor like that.
Yeah.
I'm old, so.
So, Logan, we wanted to talk about your foundation. You co-founded Ryan Animal Rescue Foundation with your wife, Ashley. Can you tell us more about that and how it helps people and how people can help?
The dog's at. Yeah, man. I run a big animal foundation. We raise money, awareness for shelter animals. Encourage people to rescue and adopt instead of breeding and all that stuff. And I know that's different culture where you're from, but there's a lot of pets and shelters that need a home, you know, so give them a look first if you can. And my wife, early in our, you know, relationship, she took a job at an animal shelter and she was doing the dirty work, man, to pay her side of the bills. And that's what she wanted to do. Very independent. And I thought that was really cool of her. So I would stop by and I started to see these animals and throw them up on my Instagram to help them get adopted. Kind of grew into a thing. So, you know, animals is my cause. A lot of animal people are good people. They're people I kind of vibe with. And I bring my kids to the shelter. We volunteer at the shelter, teach my kids responsibility through that. We're at our local shelter all the time, walking dogs, taking them out, you know, let them get some run, put them on my Instagram, help them get adopted because, you know, they need a home.
It's not just dogs though.
No, cats, dogs, anything you find in the shelter, animals in general. And obviously with COVID, you know, we help people with dog food to be able to afford to keep their pets. Cause sometimes financially, if you got to make tough decisions, you might not have enough money to feed
even tell me nothing about no damn tough decision on no dogs.
Yeah. So I had
you laughing. Be serious.
The two little Pomeran, or what is it?
Multi-poos.
Multi-poos.
Yeah, multi-poos.
What do you think of David Portnoy's rescue pit bull, Miss Peaches, Logan?
Say that again?
I said, what do you think of David Portnoy's rescue pit bull, Miss Peaches?
Oh, yeah. I think I saw that, man. I think it's awesome, man. He's got a huge following, obviously. And, you know, pit bulls get a negative stigma a lot. So I think anybody highlighting their personal life and, you know, their pets, I mean, pets are family members nowadays, man. You gotta love your dogs. And I think what Dave Portnoy did, I think that was pretty dope for the cause,
man. You know, it was just here's one of my little ones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The coldest.
He showed me a picture on the PJ, by the way.
Stop, man.
On the PJ.
Stop, man. We got to travel with him. What else you going to do? Look at him. He lounging
he's
in his
chilling,
chair.
Yeah.
So we got two of these.
You get it, man.
But at the end of the day, no, I get it. But me and my son was laughing because it was a tough call. So we got two multi-pools. And the coldest hustle in the game to me, out of all hustles, the water game is a hustle.
Yeah.
This is one of the ultimate hustles. Something that we can get for free. They put in a plastic bottle and they sell it to you. But the coldest game is the veterinarian game, man. telling you.
They charge what they want.
Oh, man. We had an issue. Our dog had kidney stones. So he had kidney stones a year ago to the date. And so we have insurance, but our insurance didn't cover it all.
Yeah.
So we had to pay for it. Okay, cool, whatever. This is the first time around. So now, second time come around, they reemerge, kidney stones. I'm like, well, I thought we got rid of that before. So, you know, me, I'm like, oh, you know, they call me and the first thing they say is, oh, the dog, this, that, it went to the vet, they got the kidney stone issues. I'm like, well, what did they say? They said, we got to make this decision. Either we going to pay this or put him down. You know, me, I'm like, hey, we can buy five dogs with that. But then at the end of the day,
They get you emotionally.
My kids, they tell me no, that you're so mean. You're mean, dad. I'm like, what you mean? Like, this is your school tuition.
It gets expensive.
And then all of a sudden, I just said, all right, whatever, man. Y'all make the decision on what y'all want to do. I put it back on them. So then they went ahead and had the surgery again.
Yeah.
But it's just like, man, I should have been a veterinarian.
Well, you don't know dogs have ACLs, right?
Yeah.
So I adopted my pit. He had a bad hip. I knew he needed a hip surgery or they're going to put him down. So I saw the case. I was like, I'm going to help this dog out. So I adopted my dog, Leo, a blue pit, and I paid for his hip surgery, got him right. So he come out the hip surgery, you know, wobbling a little bit, get him right, strengthen his back legs up. Boom, 6 months later, he jog and go to catch a ball, jump up, boom, blows a knee out. So I take him to the vet, ACL. I didn't even know dogs had ACL.
Yeah, they got ACL.
ACL. Boom, I pay for the ACL. They like, look, we're just telling you there's a good chance the other ACL going to go. 2 years later, boom, other ACL. And he ain't going to no normal vet. He going to the top ACL vet in Boston.
Yeah. I'm
in
number one.
He going to James Andrews, who did Aaron Rodgers' Achilles ACL for vet. So I'm paying a specialist. He got an underwater treadmill recovery routine. They have laser. They was doing laser therapy on him.
Man.
So he was, the bill was getting high. So he did both ACLs, the hip. So then one of the plates they put in his leg got infected. His leg blew up. He almost died. So I had to get him. So I'm calling my financial advisor, like, you know, you got to call him on a big purchase. You know, that's how I set it up. Keep me in check. So I'm like, hey, man. He's like, the dog again? I'm like, yeah, man. He's like, you got to do it. You're in this deep. I say, yep. So Leo has cost me close to $20,000 in surgeries from all the legs.
Yeah, it's expensive.
And my man's still kicking 11 years in. But I'm happy, man. I don't regret it at all.
You remember, see, Keyshawn, the first time we had the surgery, he came home. He was in his little thick cone on his face so he doesn't bite himself or lick himself and all that, right? So check this out, though, Logan. I come home. I'm like, where the fuck is the dog at? One dog is there. The other dog ain't at home. So I'm like, okay, I called Jen. I'm like, do you have the dog with you? She goes, no, they're at home. I'm like, at home where? So I run all over our house, upstairs, downstairs, all over the place, down, basement, area. Just, I'm looking for the dog. Now, we live in the mountains, and ain't nothing in the mountains but wildlife.
Yeah.
Coyotes and
oh, no.
Mountain lions and bobcats. So I'm looking for the dog. The dog done literally left our house and walked about a quarter of a mile down to the front gate where the security shack is at. He done took his ass and walked down to the front. And in that time, a coyote could have got him and munched him up. And I had just spent a bunch of money getting him in the surgery.
He
man, I was
money.
So damn mad.
He worried about his investment.
Man, I was so mad, man. But no, that's just dog stories. I appreciate you.
Yeah.
I appreciate you for joining.
I love animals, man. I love my animal people.
Yeah, no, I like my dogs. They're expensive, but... You know,
no, it's people. Crazy. You
said, so are kids.
You said
kids
they were going to put your dog down for a hip, like because he had a bad hip.
Well, he was in a shelter. It's a big dog. And he had this pretty much a broken hip and he couldn't really walk. So he really was just no one was adopting him. So after a while, it was thinking about putting him down, to create more space. Like he's not adoptable. Right. No one wants to inherit. Oh, I want to adopt this pit bull. There's all a bunch of pit bulls. Get this one. And he's going to cost you this much.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, stepped in and was the one to help save him. And man, that dog's been the best. That is our best family dog. We got a couple dogs and he has been our best dog.
And you're probably feeding him chicken and rice and peas.
He went to the penthouse. He's living good, man. He's on a special diet now. But yeah, man, it was awesome. I took that dog on TV. Everything with my foundation, we've been on billboards together. He's been, you know, the poster boy for what I do and try to help. You know, you get breed discrimination. When you try to rent an apartment, they don't let you rent it if you have a pit bull, right? Certain dogs, they don't let you be a renter.
Really?
Yeah, I got turned down by like 20 different spots I was trying to rent in New Jersey, New York because I had a pit bull.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So
it
was
idea.
Like, you know, we were trying to like, man, it's messed up, man. So I went, of course, me, if I have a problem, I'm going to air it out. So I'm like, you know, trying to tell people, man, do y'all struggle with this too? Like, do you struggle? And everyone's like, yeah, man, I couldn't rent a place for a year because my dog, they kicked me out because my dog. So I was like, man, they hate on certain dogs.
All right. Man, thanks, man. Logan, thanks for
appreciate
joining
you, man.
The show. I had
a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
That's a wrap for today's show. Thanks again to Logan Ryan for joining the show. Don't forget to subscribe and follow All Facts Pod on social media. Until then, peace out. Stay out your ass out of trouble.